So today we have Mick Healy and Fiona Smart in conversation around Principal Fellow and making a claim to the Principal Fellow of the Higher Education Academy, now Advance HE. Take it away.
Thanks, Mick, for taking the time to talk with me. I really appreciate it. I wonder if we could start with your thoughts on what a PF applicant needs to communicate in order to meet requirements. So a really open question.
Great question to start, and delighted to be in conversation with you, Fiona. I think I can summarise it actually in just one sentence. I think it's showing evidence of the impact of your strategic leadership in learning and teaching beyond the department. And there's quite a lot there, and let me unpack that for a moment. Strategic leadership, firstly. We get a lot of people who talk about being strategic, but all they're doing actually is implementing other people's strategies. And I think for PF, you really need to be developing those strategies, have some responsibility and ownership of those strategies rather than simply be implementing them. Mm-hmm. Learning and teaching, it might seem an obvious one, that is the focus of the UK PSF as currently done, and therefore everything has to relate in some way to learning and teaching and impact on the student experience, even though it may be, you know, one or two steps removed. So talking about the research, it can be relevant as long as it's linked to learning and teaching, but research on its own and getting research grants is a little marginal to the application. And then the third element of that statement I made was beyond the department. That's quite critical because a lot of people, a head of department says, oh, I'm a head of department, I've got a senior fellowship, I'll go for principal fellowship now. That's fine and you might be able to do that, but if all your strategic development is at the department level, then that's not sufficient. It's got to go beyond the department level. It's got to be something you're doing cross-institutional and or national and international. Some of it should be at that national stroke international level as well. So it's going beyond the department.
And I'm wondering, Mick, in there, I think I'm hearing that the person doesn't necessarily have to be in a designated leadership role within the university. It's to do with the reach that they have from what they are doing within that university. So they don't have to be the vice principal or the chancellor or the whoever. They could actually be somebody within the university who is working with that reach. Am I right?
That very much so. I think it's one of the common traps, and we'll be coming onto those, I think, in a moment, that people say, I am a dean, therefore I must be a PF. Uh-huh. May well be, but you've still got to prove the evidence of meeting, as I said, that strategic leadership in learning and teaching beyond the department level. So it's not your role, it's your experience. And mm-hmm. So you can get somebody, you know, just a senior lecturer who does actually a lot of work probably outside the institution, perhaps with a disciplinary association and maybe a chair of that, maybe well known internationally. And that experience, as long as it's strategic and leadership levels, is very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And I think that word strategic is one that people can spend some time mulling over, but still not actually quite hitting. So as you say, it's to do with creation and not just implementing what other people are doing. It is to do with the vision that comes with strategy development.
Yeah, very much. I think if we make that distinction between developing strategy and implementing it, it's the developing the strategy, which I think is the critical part. Now, those two are not separated. They can be very integrated. But you have to have some of that development and responsibility, even though part of that strategy may be you implementing your own strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've already started to hint at some of the traps that might befall an applicant. I wonder if we should talk about what those might be and also what the solutions might be to stop yourself falling into the bear pit.
Yes, it's true. And those of us who are creditors, when we get a panel and we find several people doing things, we're almost sort of pulling our hair out. Then I've got no hair to pull out now. And say, oh, if only. It starts a little negatively, so a few knots to do, but try and give the positives as well. So I start not going beyond description. That's quite a common comment we will make. A term I often use is we have several applications which I would characterize as being annotated CVs. Mm-hmm. People tell us everything they've done, and at PF level they've done an awful lot. And they will just go a little beyond the list of what they are, but it's still very much at the descriptive level. They haven't answered the so what question. Mm-hmm. That they have that role, they've done that. What difference has it made? And so we want them just to go beyond that description level. I think related to that is not being selective. And that mm-hmm. relates to my annotated CV element. People like to tell us everything they've done and think, oh, I've missed something out, or I must add that in. Actually, being selective is actually very appropriate. And we often advise people to think of the four sections in the PF. Think of two or three mini case studies per section, and, mm-hmm. Different ones. So that could be, 8 to 12 instances where you've done, but that could be half a page or so on each. So it gets a bit more depth. It describes what the activity is and how you've been strategic about it, but it also goes beyond that to provide the evidence of the impact. And that gives you the space to do so. So you don't have to say everything you've done in your life there, but choose the best examples. Be selective.
And it seems to me, Mick, that the first part of that process is really taking the time to look at the record of educational impact and not seeing that as a chore, but actually seeing that as a part of the process of selection. Because if you've got, 30, 40 entries, you need to select down. 30, 40 entries you are not going to do justice to within your 7,000 words.
Yeah, I've seen ones which have had from, I think, 3 entries there to over 40 entries. Mm. And it's somewhere 15 to 20, something of that order of magnitude. It's not it could be less, it could be slightly more. But you're not going to have time in the or space in the application to talk about 20 different things you've done. So sometimes it's a matter of grouping them. I have seen ones where they've listed each individual paper that they've produced. You could have one category about, active researcher in learning and teaching. And then when you talk about that, which you would do if you're there, because it's part of your impact, is the publications you've had and the conference papers you've given. That's where you unpack that and give some examples. But you wouldn't necessarily list every paper that you've given.
Yeah. So if people, rather than launch into writing the four sections, if they use the record of educational impact to start looking at what could go in there and then to whittle it down to the best examples, the ones that they can do the so what to.
Yeah, it's often a matter of aggregation or disaggregation. If you've only got 3 or 4 very broad ones, well, you disaggregate it. If you've got 30 of them, you aggregate them.
Yes, I understand. So what's some other traps? So we've got the not following it through to the so what and the evidence.
Let me expand on that last one, because I think that's where it becomes more positive. It's the not being reflective and evidence-based about the impact. And that is very much about answering the so what and the then what questions. Mm. So you can have where people are very good, they choose 2 or 3 mini case studies, but what they tell us is just description, what that role has been and all the things they've done, or the innovative practice that they've, strategy that they've implemented. They have to go to that next stage of being reflective about it and providing evidence. And I think both are important, because being reflective can sometimes be just standing back and, what would I do differently if I did it again, sort of thing. Being a bit more personal about it, as well as the sort of evidence-based metrics, which many strategic leaders will be used to. Yes. Be able to, give us the numbers of a staff and students they've had an impact on through that strategy, and the surveys that have been done and the outcomes of those surveys. That's important evidence. But I think some reflection there as well gives it a slightly more personal angle to it. So it's answering the so what and then what questions.
And I think not falling into the trap of somehow the generalised we, the absolute clarity that when they're working with a group, what their part of that that strategic leadership was.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth, because my last one was actually using we rather than I think is a trap.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult one, because it's not an individual person who's solely responsible for developing and implementing a strategy. It is we, but what we need to know is what the individual's contribution is to that we. What was their role in it? Mm-hmm. Have they just been a minor member of a committee which has done it? Or have they actually been the chair of that committee and the real leader of it? Uh-huh. And so we just need to unpack what the specific role is. And that can be helpful in deciding which case studies to talk about. You talk about those which you have played a very significant leadership role in.
Yes. So I think what we're recognising there, it's a rare thing for us ever to work alone in academic life, and particularly in those strategic leadership roles, you just wouldn't. But you have to be able to isolate your part of the initiative, the change, the whatever it is.
Yeah, and much of strategic leadership is getting other people involved. That's almost the definition of it at that level. But how do you get them involved? If you are doing the getting them involved, then you're taking the leadership role rather than somebody else getting you involved.
Yes. Okay, so we've got some traps that people can fall into: the CV, the description, the not following it through, the not really isolating their part of what was achieved. Are there any other traps that people can fall into that you can think of?
I'm sure there are several, but I think they would do. If you can manage those, you'll be getting a good application.
Okay. So maybe if we start, we'll move to a slightly different focus. If you were sitting alongside somebody who is thinking about their PF, what would you recommend to them to do rather than just start writing? Because I don't think you're going to say that. What would you say to the aspiring PF applicant?
Well, it is planning and thinking. It does take quite a long time to put a good application together, so it is there. But I think there are three things that I sometimes don't see in applications which I would like to see. And first one is, tell us a story. Mm. Your story. Make it personal. Mm-hmm. A story which will go through the application. So we learn something about you. Yeah. And that is different from, I think, applying for a job, where it is very much more the CV and saying all the good things that I've done. Telling a story can not be descriptive. It just gives those values. Where are you coming from? Uh-huh. And that relates, I think, to the second point. I don't even start your application by being explicit about your philosophy of leadership of learning and teaching.
Mm.
That often gets missed out. I think it's something which could be added to the form, because I think that's quite critical. Now, where are you coming from? Often applications which talk about just learning and teaching. So what's your philosophy of learning and teaching? In this case, it's the philosophy of the leadership of learning and teaching. There's two are related, but it takes it a stage further. So I think making that explicit, and that gives some value judgments, and that can be, you know, where that philosophy came from is part of your story.
Mm.
And then the final one, which I think, you know, relates to that, is being scholarly.
Yes.
Sometimes people forget that they, they're in higher education. There is a literature out there on teaching and learning and on leadership. Now, this is not a paper, it's not a literature review, but I would expect people at PF level to be familiar with some of the key literature about leadership and about learning and teaching, and to be able to say that this is where some of these ideas came from. And so it's placing it in a scholarly context, but it's not a paper. But to have no references at all or no indication of any knowledge of that, I think is something which is sometimes missing.
And I think you're reminding me there, the joyous applications that I've seen and been part of reviewing are the ones where you get a really strong sense of the person and what matters to them in all of these things that they're doing. Those are joyous.
Yes. Oh, indeed. They're delightful. You say, I've really learned something. And, you know, I sometimes follow up references that, you know, people mention. Yeah. I haven't come across that idea before, or that practice. I'll look it up. I've learned something from it. That really makes me excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what we're saying is, in relation to if you are an aspiring applicant, is to stop and think and begin that process of reflection before putting pen to paper or getting out the PC, the laptop, and actually thinking about who you are, what matters, how you're approaching that leadership of strategic developments.
Yeah, in a sense, it's almost a step before that. Is the PF right for me at the stage of my career and the experience I've had? Sometimes the answer will be no, not yet. But that can actually be very powerful and say, well, actually, if I want to move in that direction, these are things I could do and try and find opportunities to develop those aspects of my career so that I could do in 3 or 4 years' time.
Yes.
There's a great tool just gone up on the Advanced HE website, which does a series of questions to help you identify which of the levels of the UKPSF is appropriate for you, given your experience and background.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that is so important, Mick, that you can use, if fellowship, a principal fellowship is what you want to achieve, you actually can plan for it. You might not be ready quite yet, but you could actually use the structuring that comes in the descriptor to help you fill the gaps and to help you develop in the direction that you need to.
The language that I tend to use is just not yet proven. Nobody fails. You just haven't yet proven that you've got there.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have got there, but you haven't told us how you got there, so you haven't proven it. Other times, no, you haven't actually got enough experience in that area yet, and maybe that's an area you need to develop and seek out those opportunities and come back in a few years' time. But I'd much rather people actually thought through those questions and then didn't put an application in now, rather than did a very tentative one, and we spend a long time giving you lots of feedback of where the gaps are. There's a lot of effort gone in and a lot of emotion goes into these, because these are very personal things. So be realistic, but don't be too modest equally. This is not a place to be modest about what you've done. You've got to identify what you've done and tell us about it. Sometimes it's a rare one, but sometimes we get applications where we actually learn more about the person from the supporting letters than we do the person. I say, oh, why didn't they tell us about this?
That's
rare, but it sometimes happens. A few people are too modest.
Yes. Yeah, and equally, just using big words won't actually mask the fact that you are not meeting criteria. You know, I think there is that temptation to use those very big, what I'd call power words. But actually, if there isn't something sitting underneath it that meets the descriptor requirements, it's still not going to be successful.
Yes, you can make the claim in whatever language you think is appropriate, but you've always got to have the evidence to back that claim up. Now, sometimes that can simply be a quotation from somebody who's been impacted by you, and that's a very powerful piece of evidence.
Yes.
But without some of that evidence of impact, the claim is empty.
Yeah. Mick, from my perspective, that's been really helpful, because what it's doing is it's your lived experience as a PF, but also as somebody who's helped other people and who's made decisions. That's coming through there, and I'm as certain as I can be that that's going to help our listener think about what they're doing and the things that they need to be aware of and try to avoid. So thank you very much, Mick. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I think to end on is really, this can be great fun as well. Yeah. You know, higher education and teaching and learning should be fun. Yeah. So you shouldn't see this as a major task and one to put off. Well, it is a major task, but get some enjoyment out of it as well. And when you get your PF, celebrate.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mick.
Thank you.